it looks like you can hear us and you can see us. Thank you so much for joining the webinar today that we're going to discuss opportunities in Europe and Eurasia. And we're going to move to the next slide. Again, thanks again so much for joining. My name is Aphrodita Krasnichi. I'm the Outreach and Recruitment Officer working on the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program based in New York City, working for the Institute of International Education. And with me today here, we have my two colleagues, Carlene Velez, who is Outreach and Recruitment Specialist based in D.C. office, and Kimberly Williams, Outreach and Recruitment Officer based in D.C. office. So all three of us work on Europe and Eurasia region as part of the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. So we're excited to share with you opportunities for 21-22 application cycle, and we just launched in February the new application cycle, and again the deadline is going to be September 15, 2020. So we can move next to our slide. Before you even consider applying to the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program, first think about the mission of the Fulbright Program and think about ways how you can incorporate that into your application, because this is a program that offers opportunities to passionate and accomplished faculty, administrators, artists, journalists, and many other professionals to teach and conduct research abroad. So this is for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. And the main goal of the Fulbright Program is to foster mutual understanding between nations. And this is something that you need to incorporate into your application, especially in the part where you represent the United States as cultural ambassador abroad. And a brief history about the program: it was established in 1946, and it is supported by U.S. Congress and supported through the State Department, and it is one of the United States government's flagship international educational cultural exchange programs. So it is funded by the U.S. Department of State, and funding is also given by the Fulbright Commissions overseas that also manage the program, and also it is managed by U.S. embassies abroad. So here in the U.S., the Fulbright Program is managed by the Institute of International Education, the organization that all three of us work for. So you will hear from me and from Carlene and from Kimberly throughout this presentation. And just remember that you can chat in any questions that you have, and we'll get to the questions later. And also, we will be archiving this webinar, so you can get back to this webinar later on. So thanks again for your attention. Now I would like to turn it over to Carlene, who's going to tell us more about the diversity and inclusion as part of the Fulbright Program.
Thank you, Aphrodita. Here at the Fulbright Program, we strive to make sure that our applicants reflect the diversity of U.S. society and society and societies abroad. And that's why we encourage involvement from people from traditionally underrepresented audiences. And at the Fulbright Program, we actually actively recruit from a lot of rural colleges, minority-serving institutions. We accept people into our program regardless of race, color, national origin, age, religion, geographic location, disability, and sexual orientation. So it's something that we take very seriously in the Fulbright Program. And just a word about individuals with disabilities. We do want to encourage you to apply as well. Your application is always judged on your academic merit, but we do make take every chance possible to provide you with accommodations that will allow you to successfully be abroad even with a disability. So please reach out to us if you have any questions about that. Okay, Fulbright by the numbers. The great thing is that the Fulbright funds over 8,000 awards annually, and of those 8,000, 800, or roughly 10%, are for U.S. scholars and administrators. The exciting thing about that is that you have an abundance abundant opportunities to receive awards through the Fulbright program as a U.S. scholar. And to date, we have about 390,000 Fulbrighters who have participated in the program, and it is a wonderful opportunity to become part of the Fulbright family, and its connection, you make connections that will last for a long time.
Thank you, Carlene. Distribution of awards. This slide emphasizes the fact that Fulbright allows for a wide variety of activities depending on the strengths and preferences of the applicants. This particular distribution changes from year to year because many awards allow you to choose your preferred activity. Activity preferences can change year by year. Eligibility for U.S. Scholar Program. These are the overall eligibility requirements. The most essential one to keep in mind is that the program is only open to U.S. citizens. Green card holders are not eligible. For the degree and experience as required by award section, the categories listed are most common ones seen in the awards requirements tab. In regard to returning Fulbrighters, the policies state that there must be 2 full years between the completion of a grant to an application deadline of the next grant. Applicants can review the award description or contact the Fulbright office to review confirm eligibility.
Thank you, Carlene and Kimberly, for giving us an overview about the Fulbright program in general. And now we can dive into the opportunities into Europe and Eurasia. As you can see, Europe and Eurasia is the largest region in the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. They offer diverse opportunities in all disciplines, and the program is offered in 44 countries. Represented and ranging from Ireland to Azerbaijan and all in between. So it's really a large program, and also it offers all these diverse opportunities. We do have 270 award offerings in Europe and Eurasia region, and these awards, which are opportunities, they offer somewhere over 500 grants a year. So this is like 60% of overall grants that we offer in the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. So we do offer also opportunities to accommodate those academics who cannot otherwise leave or take sabbaticals for a period of time. So the flex option is offered in many of the European countries. So you can do these multiple visits within the span of 2 years, as long as you stay in the hosting country for 1 month. Moving on to the regional highlights, because every year the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program tries to innovate and bring new ideas, innovative ideas, so that it's following the trends of the developments in the academia. So again, the main focus in the is in the STEM disciplines, and we do have the big countries like UK, which is one of the largest countries in Europe that offers so many opportunities in partnership awards in the country to do teaching or research in the STEM fields. And then France also offers a large programming, and all the other countries listed here. Another highlighted discipline that we wanted to pay attention to is the teaching English as a foreign language, which is offered in several countries in Europe. So if you're looking to conduct teaching or research in any in TEFL or the STEM fields, just look up some of these countries that were listed here. In terms of the professional project, this is a new kind of field or opportunity that is offered in the last 2 years in the Fulbright program. So basically, you can do projects with organizations, with NGOs, with governments. You can serve as consultants. And in some of the countries listed here, they do offer amazing opportunities and we would like you to explore them. And then U.S. studies is still continuing to be offered for many years now, and some of the countries highlighted here have amazing opportunities. Moving to the next slide, where I really wanted to discuss about the new awards that are offered in Europe and Eurasia. Like Albania every year is trying to bring up a new award to offer applicants, academics, and independent professional opportunities in doing research in the public administration. So it's a really high-profile award that the applicants could work with some government leaders at the Albanian School of Public Administration. Then Czech Republic, which dominates with many distinguished chair awards, this year decided to give a new approach to give opportunities to postdoc applicants to do research from 3 to 9 months. And then Finland is also following the trend for global challenges and providing solution or seeking solutions for global challenges is offering this new award. And Ireland in the medicine field is a clinical research design. So they are also expanding this opportunity. In Poland, which has a predominantly distinguished chair awards, is offering another interesting topic in East European and Eurasian Studies at Center for East European Studies at the University of Warsaw. So all these amazing opportunities, just to mention at the end, the Slovak Republic is also joining the trend in informatics and information technology. So computer science is also another big topic in the Fulbright program. So moving on to the next slide. I would like to give the floor to Carlene and Kimberly to talk more about postdoc and multi-country awards.
Thank you, Aphrodita. Some of the postdoctoral awards include the Fulbright HS Postdoctoral Award in Social Sciences for France. This award allows grantees the opportunity to conduct research in their area of specialization. The grant length is between 9 and 12 months, with 12 months being the preferred duration. Also, the Spain All Disciplines Award allows grantees the opportunity to teach and or research for a duration of 5 to 9 months. The Czech Republic Postdoctoral Research Award allows postdoctoral fellows who are recent graduates within 5 years of completing their PhD studies the opportunity to undertake original research, publish research findings while developing and expanding their personal research networks.
As far as the multi-country awards, we have three awards that fall under the Fulbright-Schumann category, which are to do research in the European Union, especially on issues related to the European Union and U.S. affairs. So we have the Fulbright-Schumann Innovation Award, the Fulbright-Schumann European Union Affairs Program Award, and the Fulbright-Schumann Postdoctoral Award at the European University. So the last one is going to take place in Florence, Italy. With the other two awards, you get to select 2 to 3 countries in the European Union in which you would like to conduct your research. These awards are for 3 to 9 months, with preference given to awards that to projects that are 4 to 6 months in duration. Okay, next.
Thank you, Carlene and Kimberly. So going back to highlight the Distinguished Chair Awards, because many European countries offer like so many opportunities for more senior level of scholars. So Distinguished Chair Awards are offered to those applicants who have at least 10 years of teaching and research experience and are accomplished scholars in their field. So with some exceptions, some countries are considering and are open to applicants who don't have necessarily 10 years of teaching and research experience. So we would really like you to look into these opportunities for more senior level of scholars who have more experience in the STEM fields, especially in Austria. We do have a great opportunity in Czech Republic, which also has 4 Distinguished Chair Awards, and Denmark, European Union, like Carlene mentioned earlier, Finland, also France and other developed Western and Central European countries. So you want to also note that the most Distinguished Chair Awards that are listed in these countries are affiliated with a partner university or institution of higher education, and they also have the specific discipline that they highlight in their awards. But do you want to look at, for example, in France, we do have the Tocqueville Distinguished Chair Award that is offering an all discipline award, so it's not affiliated to any university, and it's they're looking for applicants in all disciplines. So, you know, some countries are really working towards offering opportunities and making these awards more open-ended. Moving on to the next slide, we do have some special features in Europe and Eurasia region. Most of these awards, as you will notice as you will scroll through our catalog of awards, they don't require the local language. However, like we do have some awards in France, Spain, or and Portugal, that they would require some level of knowledge of the language, local language. So you want to make sure you look at the language requirements part, and I'm going to show you the catalog of awards shortly so you can see what is it required. But again, keep in mind, majority of these awards do not require language. And then for the European Fulbright U.S. scholars who are selected to go to Europe and Eurasia, they have this great opportunity to go to a seminar in Berlin that is hosted by the Fulbright Commission in Germany, and they bring together all the U.S. participants, and they go into this four-day seminar, engage in intercultural dialogue, and it's a great opportunity to expand your network and meet other Fulbrighters and learn what they are doing in other countries. Moving next to the next thing is for us, we're happy to show you the catalog of awards, which is the first stop for you as an applicant. So we're going to see the website live, and we have it updated with new opportunities. If you give us just 1 minute to upload it on the Google Chrome, preferably. Yes, perfect. So this is the website, is cis.org. So you will see on the home page here, we do have as the Explore US Scholar Program, but the first place I want you to look at is the Browse the Awards Catalog. So click on that, and then here you're able to see you can use these filters and select the region. So if you select Europe and Eurasia, and then you can just search the awards, and all the catalog of awards will appear. So we do have like 254 awards in, again, like I mentioned, in 44 countries. So if you scroll down on the filters, I want to show the applicants the filters, and this is pretty cool and amazing. You can, again, filter them by multi-country awards, and you can filter them if you go up. Sorry, I missed the country or area. You can just type in or use from the drop-down list. You can select a country and that you want to apply to, and then the discipline is also, we do have all disciplines represented here, and then under the disciplines, you can filter them with the other categories that are listed on our filter, the activity, basically, if it's a professional project or if it's teaching, research, seminar, because we do offer also seminars for administrators at universities who work on study abroad projects. And also under the activity, you can see other features like the grant length, and if we offer the flex option, you can pick that. You can filter them by degree requirements, and then you can filter the candidate profile, whether the PhD is required or not, and most importantly, also you can filter if the letter of invitation is required, is not required, or is optional, etc. So if we pick, for example, if we scroll up and just pick one of the countries. I would like to show you, like, for example, United Kingdom, which is like number one country in the scholar program, and you can just select United Kingdom, search the awards, and you can see UK, for example, offers mostly partnership awards, but there are a couple of awards that offer like discipline focus award, like cybersecurity, and it's open-ended award with any institution. So UK does not have an open-ended or like we call all discipline award. So you can, we can look at the cybersecurity award, and I'm going to show you where to look for all these important details that you need to check and make sure that this is a good match. For example, every award would have the title, the name of the country, the region, and then we have four tabs. So these four tabs, you need to read through them very carefully. The first one, award details, here, the grant activity, you will see what they're looking for. Sometimes they put information here that is valuable for you to know whether you can bring in that expertise they're looking for. If you scroll down, further down, like some countries are really working hard to provide information for applicants so that it is very helpful. The grant length, you want to make sure you match the grant length according to the requirements and the grant date as well, because they're very specific in most of the cases. And then location, for example, this award is open to any institution but does not offer the flex option. So basically you have to do the project during these strict dates. Discipline types are listed here, and then if there are any special features, they will be listed further down. If we can scroll down, we can see what more information is provided here. Scrolling up, we can go to the second tab, which is also has crucial information about the letter of invitation. It is required. And then in many cases, they would sometimes provide the information or even an email of the potential host institution. Again, this is UK, so English is sufficient, but for some other countries, you would find information whether language is required or not. Additional information will be found here, scrolling down. You would find here sometimes many websites or email addresses of people you can contact. For example, here we have the Fulbright Commission contact in the UK. And then scrolling, going up, we have the third tab where you will find the stipend and benefits, and then this is if selected, you will receive this stipend and then some other additional benefits. So every country has different stipends and depending on the standard of living, but also every award, especially if there are partnership awards in these developed countries, they would offer like different kind of stipends. And the last tab, the fourth tab, country area overview, this is where you will find information about the country and how many people are selected to go on a Fulbright overall and additional information. If you look on the further on the right side, you will see the deadline is there, the activity proposes research only. And sometimes you will see teaching and research or professional project. So you have to adjust your planned activity according to the requirements. The degree requirement, whether PhD is required or not, it will be listed here. Candidate profile, whether it's for early career, senior level career, or open to any kind of level of scholars, and how many grants will be given. And then for every award, we have a designated staff member that works on these awards. So feel free to reach out to us if you have any questions. And the last thing I wanted just to show you is further up, to begin the application process. So basically when you click on this, it will take you to another page where you can see the application procedures, and then it is more like a checklist from A to Z of everything you need to do to make a strong and competitive application. And I can just take you one more time on home page where I would strongly recommend home page. If you click on home, here the first tab, you can see here the scholar directory, which is the third tab, And I strongly recommend that you look for scholar alumni that went to this particular country you're interested to apply to or considering, so that you can reach out to these alumni and get their feedback, or just get connected with them and see what you know, it takes to make a strong and competitive application. So this is all for now for our website. We can go back to our presentation. And then we can take the questions later on. I just wanted to also, we have, I think, one more slide. Sorry about the technical difficulties. We just want to discuss with you the timeline, which Carlene is going to tell you all about the application cycle timeline. And thank you very much again for your attention.
Okay, thank you, Aphrodita. So the most important date to remember is that for most U.S. Scholar Awards, the deadline is September 15th. And I say most because the awards, especially the ones to France and Germany for international education administrators, do have a different deadline. So please consult the award description for the exact deadline of the award to which you're applying. But on the whole, most of them are September 15th. And then just to give you a little bit of information, October and November we conduct peer review by discipline here in the United States. And after that point, the applications who make it through peer review are forwarded on to the host countries for further consideration. Our goal is to notify all grantees between January and April, and I know that's a long time frame, but we do our best as soon as we get the results in from the host countries to let you guys know as soon as possible the status of your project. Okay, next slide, please. So our final request before we move into the question and answer portion is to encourage you to stay connected with us. The best thing that you can do, it's listed up at the very top, which is join My Fulbright. My Fulbright is a venue where you can register your interest. So if you're interested in Europe and Eurasia, or maybe the United Kingdom or Finland, or maybe you are interested in doing STEM in Europe and Eurasia, by going to CIES2.org, you can register your interest, and then you will get targeted emails only related to your preferences. So that's a really wonderful way to stay in touch with us. If you have specific questions that we're not able to answer in the webinar, you can email us at europeeurasia@iie.org, and we will answer those email messages daily. So please do try to send all your questions in. You can also connect with us on social media. You can visit our website, or if you have some other colleagues who you think might be interested in our program, once you download this presentation later on, click on that Refer Your Colleagues link, and we will follow up with some contact information for the colleagues. Thank you very much for listening today. What we'll do for the next bit of time is to go into the question and answer portion. There are quite a few that came in. So if you just give me a second, I will move into the question and answer portion. Okay, so we have a question at the very beginning that was asking about, can you apply for more than one program? Aphrodita?
Yes, thank you, Carlene. So you can apply to only one award, one country per application cycle, unless you're considering one of the Schumann Awards, which you can apply to this one award. However, you would be selecting two or three countries. So that's the only exception. But you can only apply to one award per application cycle.
Thank you, Aphrodita. There's another question about the letter of recommendation. The letter of invitation. If a letter of invitation is not required, is there an advantage to have one anyway? Do we as applicants have access to the rubrics used for the applications?
So there are two letters required for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program application, if I understand that correctly. The question was
the invitation letter.
The invitation letter. Sorry. Yeah, the invitation letter, if it's not required, then you don't have to provide a letter of invitation. However, remember, this is a program that is a binational program, and it needs an endorsement from two countries, your home country and also this hosting country. So it's always recommended to get a letter of invitation, because that is going to be your endorsement from the host country, if possible. That's why so many countries have not required to have a letter of invitation, because sometimes it's difficult to get one. But if you manage to get one, it will enhance your application.
Thank you very much. There's another one that says, if an award offering says a full year or 8 months is preferred, will they consider a shorter period of time, for example, a half a year, when you are applying? And if so, will that negatively affect your application, Aphrodita?
So it will not affect negatively your application. However, since they have secured funding for the up to 8 months, they would prefer to have applicants who have a project for up to 8 months and have the availability to stay up to 8 months. When choosing two applicants, one like you submitted for 6 months and another one for 8 months, they will give, considering that you have both qualitative applications, they would give preference to those who submitted for 8 months. So this is how, you know, everything works in the Fulbright program.
Thank you. Kimberly, I have a question for you. Do you have to have a university affiliation to apply for a Fulbright?
It all depends on the specific award. We encourage you to view the award, and under the candidate profile, it will indicate whether it is open to academics or your professional level.
All right, thank you very much. The next question is, what are the rules for dual citizens? I am a U.S. and Italian citizen, which is obviously an EU country, and was hoping to go to Spain. Aphrodita, can you respond to that one, please, about dual citizens?
Sure. So there are exceptions for the dual citizenship. Some countries do not accept applicants with dual citizenships. For example, Italy will accept you if you apply to Italy. But then if you have a dual citizenship with Italy and U.S. and then you want to apply to Spain, that does not disqualify you. You are still eligible to apply. You just have to pay close attention to that page that I was showing you on the award. They're very specific. Like, for example, Germany and Spain does not allow dual citizens to apply. But then if you are a dual citizen with another country, that's okay.
Thank you. I have another question that's asking about available data. How competitive are the awards? Unfortunately, we are not allowed to talk about how many applications we receive per award, so we can't give that information out. But if you do call us, we can possibly help try to guide you to an award that is the best match for your skill set. Because regardless of how many applications an award gets, if you match your skills to what the award is asking for, then you will be a competitive applicant. Okay, there's another question, Aphrodita, about are there other opportunities in the European Union besides those that were listed in today's webinar?
So these are all some of the highlighted opportunities, but we do have, like we mentioned earlier, opportunities in 44 European countries. So you can look them up. I think the majority or 98% of the European countries offer opportunities as part of the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. And I was showing you earlier that filter, how you can filter the countries, you can look them up. So we do not have the program in Europe in Switzerland and Greenland. These are the two countries that do not offer the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program.
Okay, thank you. I have another question from someone interested in the Distinguished Chair Award. They are later on in their career, and their career has been primarily teaching-focused rather than research-focused. And the question is whether they will be eligible. That question right there would have to depend on the award to which you are applying. So if you are primarily from a teaching-focused institution, you would want to look for awards, even in that distinguished chair category, that have the activity of teaching available. One of the best ways to be competitive is to look at your CV and see where your strengths are, whether they are in teaching or research, or teaching and research, and choose the activity that best matches your skill set. And that way, whether it's a Distinguished Chair Award or a traditional award, you can be competitive because your skills match what it is you propose you're doing, proposing to do. And do remember that you are only allowed to apply for one award per application cycle. Okay, there's another question, Aphrodita, about age limitations. Is someone, for example, who is 70 or older eligible to apply?
Yes, definitely. You are eligible and welcome to apply. It's like every other applicant, you want to show the impact that you will have upon returning to the U.S. So basically, if you're selected to go on a Fulbright and then you return to back to the U.S., you just have to have a vision and also a plan on who is going to benefit from your experience in the Fulbright. So will you share this with a community, or will you be teaching, or what are some of the activities you plan to do upon returning to the U.S.?
Thank you, Aphrodita. I have another question I'm going to give to Kimberly here about invitation letters. Someone says, is there a chance to apply without an invitation letter?
Yes, it would depend on the specific award. If the award is calling for a letter of invitation to not be sought, you may not submit one. It is all dependent upon the guidelines within the award.
Thank you, Kimberly. The next one is also about the invitation. So if it does say optional or preferred, Aphrodita, can you address how that would impact the application if it says the letter of invitation is optional or the letter of invitation is preferred?
So, like I mentioned earlier, when it is optional, you don't have to submit it. Your application is going to be reviewed and will be technically complete. You want to think about how you're going to enhance and stand out. I always recommend applicants to get a letter of invitation, regardless if it's optional or preferred. The only time when you really don't want to get a letter of invitation is when we specify that the letter of invitation should not be sought, basically. But you want to make sure that your project is feasible in the hosting country, in the hosting institution. This is your chance where you can prove that to the panel who is going to review your application.
Thank you. I have another invitation letter question. What are the most common or the best ways to talk about invitation letters with potential hosts? Aphrodita, can you address that, please?
Sure. Yes. So the best way and best approach, in many cases, it could be your first reaching out to this institution. And the best approach is to do a summary of your project and how would they benefit from your experience and from your expertise. And also make sure that you send them your resume and any work-related project or experience that you have on the terms of what they are requiring, make sure you highlight that. And in many cases, this has proven to be very successful because even institutions in Europe are very familiar with the Fulbright program. They know how prestigious the program is, and they're open to these collaborations. So make sure you reach out to them. Sometimes they're not very responsive, unfortunately, but you have to be persistent to reach out a couple of times, several times, until you really get an enthusiastic endorsement from the host institution, and then you get a letter, a strong letter of invitation, which is very important.
Thank you. I'm going to answer another question about invitation letters. It seems like that's a common theme in our questions today. This one is about how you get a letter of invitation for Schumann Awards. And I do want to point you again to the award description. In the award description, in particular in the award requirements tab, where it lists the invitation, whether it's required or not, there are email contacts in there. And so you can actually email the address that's listed in the award description, and they can help you secure the letter of invitation. And one other thing I do want to point out about letters of invitation is, remember, in Europe, August, sometimes July and August, sometimes only August, are generally vacation months. And so the universities will often shut down, and you might not get responses to your requests for invitations. And so I encourage you, right now we're in February, you guys are already thinking about Fulbright Awards. I would encourage you, sooner rather than later, to try to reach out and secure those letters of invitation. You will have a lot more time to secure them, and I think you'll be a lot more successful. Okay, another question over here is, Kimberly, this is for you. If an award says teaching or research, in general, does one have a better chance of getting the project than another?
The answer to your question would be no, you don't have a greater chance.
And it all does depend on your CV and what your CV can support. So if you do have, or you have a strong research background and you're not in the classroom often, then you might not be as strong of a candidate for a teaching and research position as if you have both activities that you regularly participate in your home institution. Okay. Next question. Aphrodita, can you describe how the applications are evaluated?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yes. Yeah, so basically, after you submit your application after September 15 deadline, then there will be a technical review of your application to make sure you're not missing like a letter of invitation that, and when it is required, or a letter of recommendation and two are required, or a project statement, or in case you're applying for teaching, you need to submit your bibliography. When you're applying for research, when you're applying for research, you submit your bibliography. When you apply for teaching, we need to see the syllabi. So these are some of the components of the application. And then the first review of your application happens sometimes by December. And then these are Fulbright alumni that are in the panel, and they will review these applications. If you pass the first review process, then we will let you know sometimes, you know, by mid-December. And then the second stage, for those who pass that first stage, the second stage happens in the hosting country. And every hosting country has different style and dynamics on how they review applications. But in general, if the program is managed by Fulbright commissions, and they will invite the commissions, and they will invite members of the different partners, universities, to be in the panel to review applications. Sometimes they invite the U.S. scholars who are currently in the country, and U.S. embassy representatives are always on the panel, because remember, this is funded by the U.S. government, so they also have a saying in it, in the review process. So basically, the timeline for that second stage happens somewhere between January and April. Some countries work faster, some work slowly, but you will learn basically by April if you're selected or not in the second stage. So, this is more or less a short description of the review process, but it's a very thorough review process, because remember, this is a merit-based program, and that's why they want to make sure they only put forward the strongest applicant.
Thanks, Aphrodita. And I think that this the question was also asking about the review criteria, and so I do want to point applicants to our website, cies.org. You can get the exact review criteria that we use when the peer review committees are conducted, and you can see what your application will be reviewed on. The next question here is for Kimberly. You guys have so many good questions today. It's actually exciting to see the enthusiasm in our Europe, Eurasia group today. So this question is, for Distinguished Chair Awards, do they require an applicant to have a similar position at their U.S. institution?
Okay, thanks, Carling. You do not have to have a similar position. You will just need to meet the minimum number of years and experience as required by the award.
Thank you. I have another question. Do adjunct faculty have equal chance to obtain a Fulbright as a full-time faculty member? That is such a great question. We actually do open the competition up to all different types of scholars. And so if you are an adjunct faculty member and you have a CV to support the project that you're doing, you have an equal chance as a full-time faculty member. So we encourage adjunct faculty members to apply as well. The one consideration to keep in mind is that if you are an adjunct faculty member who does not have an independent research agenda, so you're not actively publishing, you're more on the teaching side of things, you would be a stronger candidate in teaching awards since your background really supports your excellence in teaching. So please do keep that in mind when you're applying. Okay, there's another question, Aphrodita.
Mm-hmm.
Can you spend time a week or so at neighboring institutions while doing research at a partner institution through a partnership award?
So, like, visit another neighboring country while you're on a Fulbright program?
A neighboring country or a neighboring institution within that same country, if you're on
yes.
a partnership award.
Yes, of course. You know, as a Fulbrighter, you're expected to reach out to other institutions. Sometimes they will organize lectures or public talks or interact with non-governmental organizations or other institutions. So yes, I mean, as long as the hosting institution is aware of this and is approving of this, so it should be okay.
Okay, here's another question about letters of recommendation. This year we changed the application requirement from 3 letters of recommendation to 2, but one audience member wants to know, may applicants submit more than 2 letters of recommendation?
So basically the system is set up that way that you cannot upload more than 2 letters of recommendation. So the answer is no, but if you provide 2 strong letters of recommendations, that would be sufficient for your application.
Okay. The next one is, how do we contact previous grantees that we find in the scholar directory? Aphrodita?
Thank you, Carlene. So basically, we do have their names and affiliations listed there, but we do not have their email addresses for privacy and security issues. So you can just Google them, put their name on the Google search, and then I'm sure that especially if they're academics, their email address will come up. So then you can just reach out to them. And if you put a Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program question on the subject, I'm sure they will respond and happily to help you.
Thank you. There's another question here, Kimberly, about eligibility. So someone says, I was a Fulbright scholar in 2016-2017. Can I reapply for the 2021-2022 application cycle?
Yes, recipients of Fulbright Scholar Grants are eligible to reapply 2 years after the date of completion of the previous grant.
Okay, thank you very much. I have another question that says, I am applying for a 6-month program. However, I would like to move to the host country for 1 year due to bringing my children in school. Have you heard of scholars extending their stay independently in a host country if the host country agrees? Aphrodita?
Yes, so this is a very good question. You know, the project that you're proposing in your Fulbright application has to match the timing and the grant length that is offered by the hosting country. And if you are able to extend later on or circumstances allow you, that's an independent completely from your Fulbright application. But you need to make sure that you indicate, you know, that you're planning to stay for as long as the Fulbright allows as part of the Fulbright. However, keep in mind that if you are able to go to the hosting country for, let's say, a time outside Fulbright, then, you know, they just raise these questions in the review process. So why do you need a Fulbright then? Because remember, these opportunities are given to those academics and independent professionals who otherwise do not have, like, many opportunities to travel to do this amazing work of teaching and research abroad.
Thank you, Aphrodita. Another question is, can you expand on the definition of professional for research projects? What kind of professions might be a good fit? This is a great question, and we're really trying to open up our opportunities to professionals. The professionals that we most commonly see are people like business people, lawyers, journalists, social workers, artists, and that's not an exhaustive list. Those are the ones that we see the most often. But if you have a question about whether your profession fits within the definition of a professional to apply for a professional project award, please don't hesitate to reach out to us. And if you do email us, it is always helpful if you send us your resume or your CV and the award to which you're applying, because again, the answers that we'll give you will depend on the award to which you are applying. Okay, let's move on to some other questions here. Someone is asking about how to handle U.S. income tax for the stipend and other type of compensation that you receive during the scholar award period. If you are awarded a grant, then you would want to talk to the program management team for advice on that, and they would give you all that advice after you receive the award. Alternatively, you could actually reach out to scholars in the directory and just get their firsthand accounts of how they handled the income tax piece over there. Because we are not official tax preparers, we don't provide advice on income tax. Okay, let me get another question here. If I am doing research that extends beyond the time listed in the award, that one we already talked about extending the stay. Okay,
yeah.
What are the best options if applying for FLEX program? Okay, that's a really good question right there. Most of the FLEX awards state that there is a preference that you come at some point during the academic year of the host country. While that is not always the case, there have been exceptions. That is the general preference because Fulbright, above and beyond anything, is an international exchange program, and they really appreciate the collaboration between scholars, and that takes place most during the academic year. But again, if you have questions about your timeline, you're welcome to reach out to us. Okay, Aphrodite, I have another question for you. It says, I see that the program award says that a master's degree is acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
But I prefer to apply for a PhD. I think there is a person who might be asking questions about whether while they are still in graduate school, while they are still mm-hmm. pursuing a PhD, Aphrodita, mm-hmm. whether they are eligible if they're still in graduate school pursuing a PhD. Can you answer that question, please?
So that would be an applicant eligible for the student program, Fulbright U.S. student program, because they do offer opportunities to pursue PhD degree studies. So you want to look for that. And that program is going to open their application cycle end of March for the 21-22 application cycle. And you want to check, just, you know, put in the Google Fulbright U.S. Student Program, and I'm sure that that's going to come up. Yeah, and somebody also I noticed, Carlene asked about the Fulbright Scholar Directory that we showed earlier. It's on our homepage, so you want to just look for the Fulbright Scholar Directory, and you will find the list of alumni.
Thank you. I have another question about eligibility. Someone says, in an award, if a PhD is required, is an ABD acceptable? Kimberly.
If a PhD is required, unfortunately, an ABD will not be accepted.
Thank you. Okay. The next question, Aphrodita, is, can you provide an overview of the application materials? What do you need to submit in order to have a complete application?
Yeah, thank you, Carly, and that's a great question, and we just didn't address this now because now we just wanted to, you know, start thinking about the application. But actually, when you start the application process, we do have that little button, if you remember, on the award page, start your application, where it's, there it will take you to this page of the checklist. First of all, it's the online application that is pretty intuitive, user-friendly application, and it is going to just be in the sections, and you will need to provide these components. So first and foremost is the project statement, which is 3 to 5 pages long document where you explain why Fulbright, why you, why this country, because remember, you can only apply to one country, and you can apply to one award per application cycle. So your project has to be country specific, related to that country you're applying to. Then if you're applying for a teaching award, you need to provide us with your syllabi. If you're applying for a research award, we want to see the bibliography. So basically, these are annotations and quotes of that are related to the research that you're going to be doing in the hosting country. Then the letter of invitation plays an important role, as we mentioned over and over again. If it is required, especially, you have to include it in your application. There are two letters of recommendations that are required, and make sure that you be proactive about it, that you send your recommenders kind of a summary of your project and what you're planning to accomplish, so they have an idea on how to do a great recommendation letter. So basically, these are the components of the application. And then if the language is required, you would need to, which rarely it happens, you need to provide with a language evaluation form, which is like your third recommendation. Basically, you need to register a language instructor who is fluent in that language, and they will fill out this form and just submit it on your behalf. Yeah, and these are mostly, you know, the all components that you need to include in your application and in order to have a complete application.
Thank you, Aphrodita. We have time for one more question that I will address. And letting the audience know that if we did not have an opportunity to answer your question, please feel free to email us and we will answer it. There's a person who says, I'm interested in teaching and research in biology, but my research is in biological education and teaching effectiveness. It seems like the research opportunity are typically for traditional biology research. How can we bridge this innovation gap? This is an excellent question. Because your application is reviewed by a peer review committee, you would want to decide whether you would submit under the discipline of biology or under the discipline of education. And if you look through the awards catalog, there might be some awards that are specifically asking for people who are experts in STEM education. And if you can find an award that matches that, it would be a perfect fit to what you're saying your skill set is. So again, reach out to us and we can help you identify a couple awards that might match your skill set in science or in this case biological research in its effectiveness in the classroom. Thank you guys all for joining us today. We appreciate the time that you took to be with us. Please note that you will receive an email when the webinar is posted online. We will post the PowerPoint with links, not only the ones to the awards that we talked about today, but links to every single country's awards. And we will also have the audio portion of this webinar if you'd like to review any of the questions. Thanks again, and we look forward to talking with you soon. Please note that later on in the summer, we will have an application walkthrough for applicants applying to the Europe in Your Asia Awards. So stay tuned for that. You'll find it in our webinar schedule later on in the summer. Have a good day.
Thank you, everyone. Good luck with your application. Thank you, Carlina and Kimberly. Have a nice day. Bye.
Bye.